D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service, and we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan here with you. A report from The Athletic yesterday, published by Seth Emerson and Andrew Marchand. ESPN open to paying SEC more to add ninth conference football game to schedule. According to Emerson and Marchand, ESPN has indicated a willingness to increase its payment to the SEC if the conference adds a ninth game to its league football schedule. There is no formal offer yet, and the exact amount of the increase still needs to be fully negotiated, but the sources said the additional money would likely be in the range of $50 to $80 million annually on top of the current deal, in which ESPN pays the conference $811 million per year to broadcast its sporting events. The story continues. A change in ESPN's stance doesn't mean the SEC will definitely move to playing nine conference games. Now the main hurdle to expanding the league schedule may be the future college football playoff format, which isn't likely to be determined until at least June. That makes it less likely, though not impossible, that the SEC makes a decision on a schedule format at its spring meetings later this month in Destin, Florida. Still, ESPN's willingness to up its ante is an important development, as it has been one of the main sticking points among enough SEC members to resist the push for nine games. When the SEC announced the addition of Oklahoma and Texas in July 2021, momentum toward a nine-game schedule increased instantly, with Commissioner Greg Sankey among those privately in favor. He finally went public with his preference earlier this year. But for the past 4 years, members have expressed enough opposition that the conference instead went with a temporary fix of eight-game football schedules for 2024 and 2025, the first two seasons with Oklahoma and Texas. Some of the concern was competitive, especially among teams worried about reaching the six-win bowl eligibility threshold. Some of the concern was economic. A nine-game schedule means schools could play one fewer home game every 2 years, and they wanted ESPN to help make up the difference. And it appears that ESPN, Derek Mason, and Willie Donick, we'll start with Willie Donick, is willing to do that.
Yeah, money talks, right? This is going to get them some pause. But I think you touched on, during that setup, some of the real things. You've got the Vanderbilts and the safety valve kind of teams. If you've got a 16-team league, and you know, you never know, but if you feel like more often than not you're going to be in the bottom eight, then that extra non-conference game that's going to help you get bowl eligibility, I do think still means something. Coaches are hired and fired on the number of bowl games they make. I think that's one criteria. And for the top tier, I think the focus on the ninth game, or the issue with the ninth game, is how will that ninth game affect my chances of making the playoff, right? I think those are the two things that you're focused on. If you eye a national title or a playoff appearance, because I think that's going to be the defining thing for coaches and programs, how often has your team been in the playoffs the last however many years? Then you've got to show me that the ninth game helps those teams get in and isn't a reason that they are out. Right now, there's nothing that the ninth game has done to justify, or there's nothing that you can show me, if I'm Greg Sankey, that a ninth game helps or hurts my teams. And so for the teams that really prefer to keep it eight, that's why it's always stayed eight, and they've resisted it.
Yeah, I mean, but listen, money talks, and money's going to get, you know, the SEC to play one extra conference.
What's
game.
$50 to $80 million, exactly. More dollars,
that's
right?
You might as well play.
Is it 50 to 80 per team or 50 to 80 total?
I think is it per team?
The article says the sources said the additional money would likely be in the range of $50 to $80 million annually on top of the current deal.
I read that to mean
an extra $50 to $80 million total, not per team.
Yeah, so listen, money talks. And if they can find a way to generate more money, meaning the SEC or the Big Ten, they're going to do it. You know, regardless of the health or playoffs or anything, if it's going to bring the conference more money, eventually that's the way they are going to go. Now, it may hurt some teams. They got to play an extra conference game. But then again, I just consider it all a wash, because I think the playoffs will sort of calibrate itself to the SEC and the Big Ten. And if you start seeing, you know, two or three lost teams, then they adjust. They're not adjusting for the ACC. They're not adjusting for the Big 12. They will adjust for the Big Ten and the SEC. More importantly, probably the SEC. So if you do play an extra game and you do happen to lose that extra game because it's a conference game, they will adjust for the SEC. So I don't see this as being a big problem, especially when it comes to the top tier schools, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, all teams like that have been perennially LSU tops in the SEC.
Willie, okay. I always called you Ellie. I don't know why I called you Ellie. Willie, another part of this story from Seth Emerson and Andrew Marchand, quote, another consideration for the league is the games that would not happen regularly if the SEC stayed with an eight-game schedule. The eight-game format would include only one permanent opponent for every team, so some highly rated rivalries would only be played twice every 4 years, including Texas, Texas A&M, Alabama, Tennessee, Alabama, LSU, and Auburn, Georgia. If the SEC went to a nine-game schedule, all those games would be played annually. Those matchups are all part of the 2024 and 2025 schedules, an unsubtle way for the SEC to show ESPN what it could be missing. The eight-game schedule format could always be changed to account for those games, but the conference has made no move toward doing that.
Right. I think from an audience standpoint, it's obvious why ESPN would throw extra money to get better matchups for all the reasons you just pointed out. I will give you another reason that I think a lot of coaches are going to resist this, and that is when you have to win four playoff games to win the title, the grind of getting through that many games, and if it doesn't really make a difference in a positive way of you getting into the playoffs, would you rather have that extra battle, and I mean battle, on a Saturday in October where you're playing another conference rival instead of a cupcake? And let's call it what it is. It's either a ninth game or it's a cupcake, right?
Yeah.
And what a lot of teams do, Florida will play Florida Atlantic, you know, 2 weeks before the end of the regular season. You can look at Alabama's opponents. There's a late season gimme where they can rest some guys. It's not a bye week, but you can play some second string guys. You know you're going to win. That, I think, even more, is I think coaches are going to vote for that rather than maybe play a game where you may or may not win, but you're also going to grind your team. You might lose a couple of guys to injury. And especially now that you know you got to win four playoff games, you might be more entrenched in that position.
Tennessee, after losing to Georgia and before beating Vanderbilt, walloped UTEP 56-0 at the end of the season at Neyland Stadium.
And it didn't hurt them. It's not like they were punished for playing that game.
No, they were not punished for playing a game. But listen, they want more money to the conference. And that's one of the easier ways to try to get that extra money within the conference is to play an extra conference game. Listen, you say you are the best conference in the country, and listen, for a point of time you were until the last two seasons. But if you are, then play the people within your conference. That's the way I see it. Either play the games or don't, but don't, you know, complain about it. I believe if you're the best conference in college football or in college sports, period, then you should want to play the best.
Isn't that why we loved SEC basketball? Isn't that why we loved SEC basketball?
Exactly, because
they
beat up on one another. They were the best conference.
And but that's a very different formula, because strength of schedule is a major, major part of the component there, and you play enough games where you can accomplish both, right? You play everybody in your league.
But we don't know
if you play nine conference games, there's still almost half of the conference that you don't play.
There is a point. There is a point in here about the CFP format from the article on The Athletic. Quote, the SEC has been waiting to see whether the postseason field will expand to 14 or 16 teams and whether any automatic bids will be installed in the new format. The SEC and Big Ten have discussed pushing for as many as four bids apiece. When the SEC only got three teams in the 2024-2025 playoff field, concern over further snubs immediately boosted league-wide sentiment about staying at eight games. The introduction of automatic bids may address those concerns, but momentum for their addition to the CFP structure may have stalled.
Man, you can't complain about the system, but tell us you're the best conference in all of football. It just means more, Derek. You tell us everywhere you go throughout the South, they're telling you the SEC is the best conference, but you're complaining about playing an extra conference game within the best conference. I don't get that. Either you are or you aren't. Play the best competition. And again, they will adjust for you. The playoffs will adjust for you, SEC. Why do you think they added more teams? Not because of the ACC, not because of the PAC, whatever it is now, and not because of the Big 12. It was because of you and the Big 10. That's why they expanded the playoffs. So why are y'all so scared to lose, potentially lose teams to the playoffs? They will adjust to you because you and the Big 10 brings the most money and brings the most viewerships. So they ain't going to leave you out just because you only got three this year. You should have won it if you only got three. You should have won it last year, but you didn't.
Willie, your thoughts?
I think the fans obviously would rather see an extra exciting game if you're a season ticket holder. And that is a subtle point, right, that you sometimes will lose a home game out of it. But the fans most days, especially the ones who tune in to watch all the college games, when you're looking around and you've got four games on TV and three of them are those late season cupcakes, Tennessee versus UTEP, Alabama versus Samford, or something like that, you're like, oh, man.
You lose
what if those teams were playing each other? The viewership would be way, way more. The fans would be happier. But you keep going back to the same thing. Greg Sankey, number one, he's got the Vanderbilts and some other teams. And look, I'm making no secret about it. Vanderbilt, if they had to play a ninth game last year, would they have gone to a bowl game? I don't know. That would have made it tougher.
One more point. Right? One more point about this.
You've got those teams that you can appease by staying with eight. And then on the other hand, like I said, you've got a quasi bye week for teams that now know they've got to win three or four playoff games to win the whole thing, and two of them have got to play in a league championship game. It's a lot of football. So an extra cupcake is not a bad thing. And you can't show me that there's any penalty for staying at eight. They're going to stay at eight.
An extra cupcake is not a bad thing is something I tell myself every time I take my son to one of his friends' birthday parties. Another cupcake is never a bad thing.
No, it's not.
One other thing I want to touch on in this article from The Athletic. Quote, another factor in a potential move off of eight-game slates. The SEC has been working closely with the Big Ten, which plays a nine-game conference schedule, and the league's consideration of future scheduling partnerships may hinge on playing the same number of league opponents. The SEC could also just settle for a stronger assurance that schedule strength will matter to the CFP selection committee and assume the risk of an extra conference game in order to reap the financial benefits. The new money that would head each school's way from ESPN would likely not even account for half of the more than $20 million schools will be allowed to distribute to athletes under a new revenue-sharing system starting this summer, but it would still help.
Listen, put your games where your mouth is, okay? Big Ten did it. They play nine games. Put your game where your mouth is, all right? Or put your mouth where the game, however you want to put
that
it.
That coming from the Big Ten alum.
Exactly. We play nine games, and I love the SEC. I live in SEC country, so I'm damn sure ain't going down the SEC. But if you feel you're the big dog on the playground, then go up to nine games. The Big Ten did it. And they've won the last two national championships. They ain't complaining. Well, y'all do it. Just add that extra game. And again, the playoffs will adjust for y'all. If they had to add 20 more spots to the playoff game, they would. for the SEC. If it made them enough money, they would do it. So SEC, stop complaining, man. Just play the ninth game, get the money, and roll with it. The playoffs will adjust for y'all, but they are right from this standpoint. Because we don't know, 1 minute strength of schedule matters, 1 minute it doesn't. And it's just like, what are we doing here? So I am in agreement with that. Does strength of schedule matter or doesn't it? Which one? Can you give me a definitive answer on that? But I'm not solely making my decision if I'm the SEC, because people consider me the gold standard of college sports. So, okay, I'm going to play that ninth game and deal with it, because if I'm the gold standard, everybody's going to adjust to me.
Nick Saban would agree with you, right? He's wanted the ninth game for a long time, but I do think over the years he's been in the minority, because the 8-game strength of schedule has been sufficient within the league. And then there's that one caveat that the league teams, all the members basically agree to play one. It used to be called the Power 5. Now I guess it's the Power 4. You would play one team like that, like Vanderbilt played Virginia Tech and got a huge win to start the year last year. I think that's the compromise that everybody's had. Look, if we're going to stay at 8, you got to play one non-cupcake, even if you're a team that's goal is to consistently get to bowl games. So that's what they've kind of settled on.
Sonny on our text line says, 9-game schedule is what is best for the game, but the people making the decisions care more about how much money is in it for them, and it's slowly ruining the sport.
You know what? Should they this is a question, because I don't know when this all came about in regards to the bowl games and qualifications. Because I know the SEC isn't talking about just regular bowl games. They're talking about the playoffs. They don't care about the regular bowl games outside
of
the playoffs.
Right, it's evolved
so,
away
exactly,
from that.
So they're talking about playoff slots. But if you are afraid of your team missing a bowl game, which I know you're not, or guys getting beat up and can't go to a good bowl because of the record, should they phase out of the 6-game threshold to win to be able to go to a bowl game and do it by, you know, strength of schedule in a sense? And I know that will eliminate a lot of teams, but saying let's not have the 6-game where, because a lot of teams that are good teams that maybe not be in the Big Ten or the SEC, they may end up with 5 wins because they played outside of the conference. They played Big Ten schools and they played SEC schools, and they just couldn't get to the 6 wins. Or somebody like a Vanderbilt who's plays in a tough conference, they win 5 games, but because of the qualifications now, you can't go to a bowl game. Well, if I play in the toughest conference.
Good question.
Yeah, shouldn't I? I mean, they beat me up all year, and trying to win 6 games is tough, because you brought it up, Willie. You said, well, if they had 9 games, would Vandy been bowl eligible last year?
I do wonder if the kids, you know, the amount of games, the amount of tough games, what's best for the players ever comes into the conversation. You know, how much, just like in the NFL, we're like, well, let's go to 18. We went to 17, let's go to 18. And a lot of players push back, and wait a minute, man. How much is too much? There's only so much the body can take. But does that even come up here? I don't know. The other thing that, as you throw that, if there was no requirement to have at least 6 wins, then what does that do to the 9-3 Middle Tennessee or the 9-3 Louisiana Tech when it comes to these bowl games? And there is a lot riding on that, you know, just for those programs as well, right? And so if you took a team that's going to bring an extra 10,000 fans to a bowl game, and you're like, okay, I can take a 5-7 SEC team that's having a down year as opposed to a team that's having a great year like Middle Tennessee, then what, you know, maybe that's something that you have to consider as well.
615-737-1025, your thoughts on ESPN reportedly willing to back up the Brinks truck to the SEC to add a 9th conference game. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we've spent so much time focusing on what the Titans have done this offseason. Let's get a lay of the land for the rest of the AFC South. Which teams have improved? Which have stagnated? We'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game.
Yeah, you know, as we sit here, Travis Hunter is a Jacksonville Jaguar. And really what comes to mind for me, right, thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself, right? Its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, right? Belief in achieving what many may deem impossible. Travis Hunter, he embodies belief, right? He's a rare person. He's a rare player, but he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged. And so the decision to select him was actually a statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him. Because when he is, he elevates the space around him, from the football field to the city, to the game of football itself. Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting up. Couldn't be more jacked to be sitting right here beside him and introduce you all to the man of the hour.
Duval.
Oh,
this
man.
Stuff's corny, man. Goodness.
Is there a cornier coach GM combo in the NFL than Liam Cohen and Doogie Howser MD? Actually, it should be Doogie Howser GM James Gladstone.
Wow, that was just like, was he trying to get the people to move through the city after the storm had come past the big tsunami? Where the huge winter storm or everything comes and it shuts down and it's just everything's going on, and finally at the end, it's like, this is what we got to do if we want to make it on the side. We got to do this.
This is what we've been hunting for.
Willie, I felt like I was listening to a televangelist. Gladstone right there.
That was rich, man. That was rich.
Oh, my goodness. I would have thought, like, wow.
They've been hunting Travis Hunter.
He is testing the boundaries of football. Not the boundaries of space.
Defying the laws of physics.
We've been jagged up for this.
Yes.
Jacked
up for this. No pressure, Travis.
Duval.
One more time,
Duval.
David. Oh, God. That's going to be bad during Jaguars week during the football season.
Oh, man.
Oh, so it's so bad.
No,
so
man,
bad.
The most pressure may be on Travis Hunter.
Well, we're going to talk about the rest of the AFC South because we've spent so much time dissecting the Titans roster. Let's look at the Titans division rivals. And let's start with those Jacksonville Jaguars. The big splash, of course, was trading up with the Cleveland Browns to take Travis Hunter at number 2 overall. But that offense specifically has undergone significant changes. Christian Kirk is gone. Evan Ingram is gone. They cut Gabe Davis yesterday. So a lot of pressure on Travis Hunter. They still have Brian Thomas, the second year, right? It's going to be a second year wide receiver, Brian Thomas. And of course, Liam Cohen's job is to be able to get the most out of Trevor Lawrence. So I'm intrigued by what they're doing in Jacksonville, Willie, but man, there's a lot of pressure on Travis Hunter.
I think that's going to be the story, is can they pull off what they are now alerting to? There's a couple of different approaches. Remember, I talked about all last summer, you're better off tempering expectations and then over-delivering.
Well, that's out the window in Jacksonville, based on what you just
heard. That's out the window in Jacksonville after what we just heard. They're doubling down, tripling down on, yes, this guy is going to do something that's never been done before in the history of the league, and we're sure he can do it. You know, I mean, could he have saved that for after a preseason where they trot this out, they try it? I mean, that is, again, these are the Jaguars, right? Their long-term history speaks for itself. They have fallen into many a trap with that. So they have raised the bar before this guy has ever taken a snap.
Derek, I want to ask you about Gabe Davis. So Gabe Davis was released by the Jaguars yesterday, about a year and change after signing a 3-year, $39 million contract. He caught 20 passes for 239 yards and 2 touchdowns in 10 games in 2024 before suffering a torn meniscus in his left knee and missing the remainder of the season. His average of 12.7 yards per catch was the lowest of his 5-year career. And by the way, the Jaguars will absorb a $5.7 million dead cap hit rather than the $20.3 million dead cap hit had they not made the post-June 1st release designation. But they're putting, by moving on from Christian Kirk, mm-hmm. by moving on from Gabe Davis, by moving on from Evan Engram, it'll be interesting to see how the Jaguars use Travis Hunter, how many reps he gets on the offensive side of the ball. But it's the Brian Thomas show now in Jacksonville.
Yeah, and Brian Thomas has proven it. He's one of the young and upcoming, wide receivers in this league. He had a breakout. Was it a breakout season? He did exactly what they thought he would do as a first-year player coming out of LSU. He showed you that long line of LSU wide receivers, you need to start putting him in there as well.
Nearly had 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns.
And he was the only really threat they had on the outside. Obviously, Gabe Davis was hurt most of the year. And they really didn't have a bona fide number two. So he was the guy that took on the lion's share of what they were doing for the passing game. Listen, whether they play him at receiver or defensive back, they need help in both areas. Now, which one are they going to prioritize?
Words
whichever,
are hard.
Yeah, whichever one they are going to prioritize, that's yet to be seen. Because to me, do I think he has the natural instincts of a defensive back? Yes, but where do the Jacksonville Jaguars need the most help or proof? They need it from the quarterback. They need to know that he is truly the guy. They just signed him to this big deal 2 years ago, I believe, or was it last season or the season before that? So he's entering into the second year of that deal or the first. They've already committed to him, okay? Now they got to start getting him weapons. They got Brian Thomas. Now, will having Travis Hunter on the offensive side help Trevor Lawrence more? Or will it help him more with Trevor Lawrence being full-time on the defense? Because as I said about Cam Ward, the best way you can help a young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, is you get you a damn good defense. Jacksonville Jaguars don't have a damn good defense, okay? So if they put Travis Hunter on the other side of the ball, that still can help Trevor Lawrence. But what is it that Jacksonville is looking for? Are they looking for, like, a permanent help on the offensive side of the ball? Or are they looking for a part-time help? We just put him in on third down, put him in the red zone when we need a big play. Which one is he going to be? Because a lot of it hinges on the continued development of Trevor Lawrence. He has Brian Thomas, but he needs a second option.
Well, that's why they brought in Liam Cohen, right? They hope that Liam Cohen can unlock him. So we'll see what happens with Jacksonville.
Isn't it interesting, though, guys, mm-hmm. that this is, again, on top of the responsibility they're putting on Travis Hunter to be the answer to all their problems, is they move on from Gabe Davis after, like you just pointed out, after 1 year of a free agent deal that went terribly wrong, and they're moving off of Christian Kirk. Like, who else do they have? Like,
Evan Engram. Don't forget Evan Engram, who was a highly productive tight end.
No doubt. I'm curious what happens to Gabe Davis too, because he's a guy with kind of a specific skill set. That's never really been a super efficient guy. You know, he's a guy but he's gotten down the field, right? His catch rate's always been pretty low, but his big play ability has been pretty high. Mm-hmm. He's never had, really anywhere close to 1,000 yards in a season. But he's got a specific skill set that you would think would be worthy of having on your team. But Jacksonville pitched it after 1 year. Of a 3-year deal, and they get rid of Christian Kirk. So, wow.
They're skill position players. Trevor Lawrence, mm-hmm. Travis Etienne as the running back, Brian Thomas, if we assume Travis Hunter is mm-hmm. playing wide receiver, Dyami Brown, they signed Dyami Brown in free agency to be a receiver, and mm-hmm. Brenton Strange is their starting tight end, at least as listed on this depth chart. So, an interesting mix. A lot of proven veterans on the offensive side of the ball on the way out.
What Jacksonville did was they found areas within their team in spots that they wanted to try to fill, but without having to pay an extremely a lot of money. So they got good players, solid players, sort of like what the Titans did this offseason. Went and got guys, dependable players, good players. They didn't have to break the bank for all of them. They did for the left tackle, and that hopefully that works out. But they didn't have to break the bank because they went and got who they believe was good, solid players that can help the development of their young quarterback. And it seems like Jacksonville Jaguars did the same thing this year that the Washington Commanders did last year.
615-737-1025. We'll hit on the Colts and the Texans, what they've done this offseason, their outlook after the draft in free agency. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game.
Duval.
Whew. D. Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. A very quick NHL breaking news update. We'll have Elliot Freeman on at 1 o'clock. The Anaheim Ducks have officially hired Joel Quenneville as their head coach. So Joel Quenneville back in the NHL after, what, Willie, 4 years in exile?
Two season that he was let go in the wake of the, then covering of the beach story, right, that dated back to Joel Quenneville and a lot of the Blackhawks personnel's role in a player that was physically or sexually abused by an employee. It was not Quenneville directly, for those that are not familiar with the story, but the consensus was that all members of the Blackhawks who were aware of it didn't do what they needed to do. Quenneville's position was, I reported it to management. Management then did not follow through. But at the time, the Florida Panthers did not feel like they could have Joel Quenneville continue to be their coach. And this was, what, 12 years after the incident happened. So he has been on the sideline ever since. He's a guy that's got Hall of Fame credentials based on when he has been behind a bench. So this is a big move for the Ducks, who have a team that has been rebuilding for a long time. They got a lot of good young players, but they haven't been able to put it all together.
Speaking of having been unable to put it all together, Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis. That is the big story this coming training camp for the Indianapolis Colts. They bring in Daniel Jones. They're talking about a quarterback competition. Anthony Richardson, when he's been on the field, has been inconsistent. You could certainly argue that the Colts have done him no favors. But the addition of Tyler Warren is incredibly intriguing to me. He was the number one tight end prospect in the NFL draft. The Colts snag him with the 14th overall pick. We know how important tight end is to the development of a young quarterback, Derek. And I just have this sinking feeling that Tyler Warren is going to be catching a lot of touchdowns against the Tennessee Titans over the next several years. I don't know why, but I just have this feeling in the pit of my stomach that Tyler Warren is going to become one of the most hated division rivals of the Tennessee Titans individually.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I know they want the production that Dallas Clark gave them. They want that type of production. A tight end that could be versatile, that they can run the offense through. Or around or with, it didn't matter. Doesn't matter. I was kind of upset because it's like, man, because I thought he was one of those players. You know, to me, he was a top 10 player in this draft. If you haven't watched this guy play, Tyler Warren, he is a matchup problem, and he's not just a receiver. He can throw the football. I think he was a former quarterback, if I'm not mistaken. But he can throw the football. He can line up in the backfield, run the football, jet sweeps. He does everything on the field. And that may be a nightmare for the Titans. The linebacker position with the Tennessee Titans isn't looking good right now. And they had trouble covering guys last year at that position. And I'm not sure it's going to get any better. And then when you got to go up against tight ends like this that are versatile, athletic, they can put them anywhere on the field, it just makes for more problems for your team. So I hate this one for the Tennessee Titans because they're going to be seeing a lot of Tyler Warren. And then they upgraded their secondary through free agency with Ward. That was one of the sore spots for the Indianapolis Colts last season.
Get Javarius Ward.
Yeah, they went out and get Javarius Ward, big contract. I think it was 3 years, $60 million, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So they've shored up a little bit of their secondary. But have they solidified their offensive line, defensive line? Yet to be seen. They went heavy. It seems like they went heavy defense in a sense, but getting Tyler Warren to me was just like, when I saw that, I'm like, man, we got to see this guy twice a year. Goodness.
Willie, do you have that same sense of impending doom for Tyler Warren?
Well, no, not necessarily, but we'll see. I think about with the Colts is they usually in the areas that are not super apparent to the outside fans, O-line, D-line, linebackers, you know, they're usually pretty good at building a roster. That hasn't been the problem. That usually keeps them in the mix. The last couple of years, they haven't been a bad team at all. Even though you look at their skill players and their quarterback play and you're saying, none of this really scares you, right? Other than Jonathan Taylor when he's healthy, right? We know he's a really good running back. And they finally opened up the wallet and paid a running back, right? They did do that with Taylor. Mm-hmm. But even some non-Taylor guys have hurt the Titans in the past. So they usually run the ball pretty well. They can protect their quarterback. They play pretty good defense. But they haven't had the dynamic skill players, and they certainly haven't had the quarterback. So that's where it all hinges for me, is are they going to take a step forward? Can they find better quarterback play from one place or another?
The question I have about the Houston Texans is, after taking some serious steps back last season and this offseason, they lost Laremy Tunsil. They traded him, yes, to Washington. Stephon Diggs is gone. Is it Tank Dell suffered a serious injury at the end of last season? Who knows what his availability is going to be for the start of the season? They actually brought in Christian Kirk. We talked about Christian Kirk before. They bring in Christian Kirk. They drafted two rookie wide receivers, Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel. But again, it comes back to the Texans were the toast of the AFC South a couple of years ago. They went from worst to first. This past season, they took a step back. They still made the postseason. They are the class of a weak division. But after taking that step back, this past season, Derek, I'm wondering how much of a step forward they can take again this year.
Well, they have to Stephon Diggs, I know he got hurt early, but he was trending up when he was playing before his injury. He was a guy that I think was going to be a big part of what they were doing from a passing standpoint. I think he ended up with 8 games, 500 yards, so he would have easily been over 1,000 yards. Tank Dell went down late in the season, horrific injury, so he may not be back in time. But I like what they went and did from a receiver standpoint early in the draft. They went and got both of the kids from Iowa State. And I like Jalen Noel. Upset the Titans didn't get him, but that's neither here nor there. It's another guy they're going to have to see twice a year. I believe they upgraded their wide receiver position with Jalen Noel, but they drafted Jaden Higgins right before that in the second round. And a lot of that is predicated on Tank Dell and what is going to be his timetable coming back. But what they're doing is what the Tennessee Titans are going to have to do as we move forward. They are going out and getting young receivers to grow with their young quarterback. All four of their receivers, I know Tank Dell is injured. All four of their receivers now are under the age, I think, of 27, 28, with Nico Collins being the elder statesman. And he just signed a big deal 2 seasons ago. So they have a young crop of receivers with their dynamic young quarterback. Watch out for Houston in their offense. You saw it explode 2 years ago. Last year, they took a step back. I think a lot of it was because they started to develop injuries at key spots. The offensive line didn't help either. But once they get the – they are building something. They got a good defense. They are building something on offense that we need to watch for the next 4 years because these all these guys are young, and Nico has gotten his contract already. And you got three other guys that are young guys that one has shown he can be explosive in Tank Dell, and then two, you drafted high and you expect them to come out and be a big contributors in your offense.
Really, one of the problems for the Texans last season was that they gave up a ton of sacks.
Yeah.
And now they're losing Laremy Tunsil. So I'm curious about how that offensive line holds up for C.J. Stroud.
And I do not know. I haven't looked recently at how Tunsil graded out. If he's starting to move a little bit past his prime, that might be part of the reason they moved on. But it seems like that's always a thing for Houston, is protecting the quarterback. They've had plenty of years where they have not had great offensive line play. But my thumbnail from where I sit with them is a lot of things for them went wrong last year, and they still won the division kind of by default because the other three teams sort of just couldn't get it together on different levels. But if they have certainly the highest ceiling by far, right? As D-Max pointed out, if some things go right, they could be pretty good. They've got some pretty good talent on the defensive end. They're the team that should be the hands-on favorite, but it's just a question of how good they're going to be. Are they going to continue to struggle to find the groove right with their offense, the pieces around their young quarterback? Can C.J. Stroud bounce back from a little bit of what we would say a sophomore jinx or a sophomore slump? I think these are the questions for them. I still see the makings of a pretty good team, but are they in the category of the Chiefs, the Bengals, the teams we've been considering the usual suspects in the AFC?
Houston's over-under win total is 9.5.
Yeah, I think they are. Listen, I'm not saying like Kansas City. Kansas City has shown they are on another level majority, you know, over the last course of the last 5 years. Now, last year, I know they didn't win the Super Bowl this past season, but they went. So they are on their own tier. But when you start talking about, you know, Baltimore, Buffalo, and some of these other teams, then yes, I think what derailed Houston last year was the injuries too. The injuries, you know, took a toll on a young team. And if they can stay injured, which if is a big word in the game of football because it's so physical, if they stay healthy, at least in the you know, prime positions, receiver, quarterback, offensive line, more so the tackles, then I think this is a team that will be competing with Baltimore and Buffalo and Cincinnati for, and maybe even Kansas City, because I'm not sure how good Kansas City is going to be. Now, when I say I'm not sure how good they're going to be, I'm not saying they're not going to be a playoff team. I'm just saying,
right? Will they take a step back?
Exactly, absolutely. So they may just as well be competing alongside them as well, meaning Kansas City. Houston, I'm competing with Kansas City.
Let's leave it here with this one texter, and I think we can all agree with this. One texter says, I don't care what the Titans' record is, but we had better not lose to the Jaguars. We better be at least 2-15. Jeez, what a cringy franchise. I wholeheartedly agree with the cringy franchise thing. Yeah. Oh, boy. They just give me the shakes.
Yes. Give me the ick.
Duval.
Oh, it's bad. It's so bad. Again, if you haven't seen that, go watch it. Just type in Liam Cohen Duval onto Google or Twitter.
But he didn't start that, right?
No, not at all. But it's just
how... Well, that's what I don't understand is why do people from Duval think that that's like a cool thing? It doesn't sound cool to me. Sometimes like other teams, even teams you hate, have a cheer or something.
They're proud of their county.
No, but when you hear it, in the stadium, it does sound like it is impactful because you hear it's just the crowd like doo, and then it's just the bass on it. So I can get when everybody's saying it, but it's cringeworthy when the coach says doo.
But the thing about that,
I'm gonna hear the crowd do it and see how it sounds with that. Maybe it sounds
the thing about that clip of
I've never noticed it before
is the face he makes after he does it. Because he is so proud of himself for nailing it. It looks like before that news conference, he practiced it in the mirror for hours. It's just this. It's just a subtle face he makes after he does it. Like he's looking for the laughter that never comes. Oh, man, it's bad. It's secondhand embarrassment to the extreme. 615.
I will say that the guy that made the speech, Adam, last night for Northeastern, he was the featured speaker, you know, at the graduation.
The commencement speaker, yes.
Yeah, the commencement speaker. You know, not a really household name or anything, but a good alum. And he was a good speaker, and he told a joke that kind of just went over like a lead balloon. And he looked out and he said, "Well, I thought I would get a better laugh out of that."
You can't acknowledge it. You have to just power through.
He acknowledged it. He recovered because of that. It was pretty good.
Okay. All right. 615-737-1025. Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, will join us next. We'll discuss the Stanley Cup playoffs and the Nashville Predators with our good friend Elliot Freeman. That's coming up next. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game.